You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Friday, TGIF. Time for our reporter roundtable. This is when we get you up to date on all the news that made headlines around our region this past week. And a lot of stuff happened this last week. Joining us live in studio today, Melissa Davlin with Idaho Public Television, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Statesman, and Margaret Carmel with the Idaho Press. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Gemma.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Okay, so I thought after Wednesday, we would no longer be talking about elections, but since it is the roundtable, we do need to talk about it once again. So kind of an historic moment in Boise, the first female elected mayor will now take office.
Right. Lauren McClain defeated incumbent mayor Dave Beter on Tuesday in the runoff election. By a margin of 65 to 35, something like that.
It's
historic because first female. And it was also, I don't know, I think for a lot of people it was a surprise that the margin was so big. I took a look at the numbers and the turnout was really huge. Combined, there are about 39,000 people who voted for either McClain or Beter in the November 5th election. And the vote tally in the runoff was about 46,000, something like that,
yeah,
in that neighborhood.
Right.
And Dave Beter received almost the exact same number of votes in the runoff election as he received in November. And Lauren McClain received about 6,000 more votes than she received on November 5th. So that suggests that a lot of people who the same people who voted for Beter in November voted for Beter in December. But there are a lot of people who did not vote for Lauren McClain in November who showed up on Tuesday and voted for McClain, about 6,000 people.
Maybe just didn't vote in November.
Well, perhaps. Yeah. But I find it hard to believe that somebody didn't vote in November but then showed up for
true.
The turnout. And it's also interesting to note that Rebecca Arnold and Brent Coles were at Lauren McClain's party on Tuesday night. So I think that suggests that there were...
That doesn't say anything at all.
that their supporters showed up for McClain.
There was a sign in the East End of Boise prior to the November general election that said, "Anyone but Beter, 2019. And I think that sentiment really showed here in the runoff, where Beter did not pick up too many of those conservative votes the way that they were expecting to, but McClain really did. And I think that one of the things that the reasons she picked up so many of those votes is because of her focus on transparency and wanting to be more open about those massive capital projects like the main library and the sports park. I think there's probably a lot of conservatives that don't feel excellent about Lauren McClain and her, her progressive political platform. But they probably felt a lot more comforted by her, desire to be, to let the public in on some of those decisions, which is really, that was the driving force in this election. The main library, I think, really was what turned the tide against Mayor Beter.
I'm curious to see what happens over the next 4 years, because this tells me that people who were voting in the runoff and all of those votes that Lauren McClain picked up weren't necessarily pro-McClain votes. They were anti-Beter votes. And there are a number of issues where McClain and Beter are pretty similar. And so what happens over the next 4 years? Certainly McClain had a huge amount of support in Boise. That was apparent both in the general election and in the runoff. But there are also a number of people who weren't a fan of her, but saw her as, I hate to say, the lesser of two evils, but just the more preferable option between Beter and McClain.
I believe someone on this program, and I can't remember who it was, unfortunately, said people like change, but not too much change. And when you look at McClain's record, you see that there's a bit of change. And Margaret, you've pointed this out in the past, but there's not a drastic change in voting her into office.
Correct. She still really wants to focus on affordable housing, public transportation, climate sustainability for Boise. Those are major points that Mayor Beter was into as well. I think just people responded strongly to McClain wanting to take a little bit more drastic action on some of those items, as well as they wanted her to open up City Hall and be more transparent. I know that Mayor Beter, I remember him telling me something that, you know, he has the most transparent mayorship in Boise history, something along that lines. But I think a lot of people felt very shut out by his decisions. And one of the things that frustrated folks is that City Hall, Boise City Hall, tends to structure its public input in the way that they give residents a lot of input. But the way they do it is they say, okay, we're doing this project. It's happening. What color do you want the building to be? Or where do you want the bike rack? You know, but they don't tend to step back and ask that question of,
do you want the building?
Do you want the building?
Well, and I think the library is, you know, I think the library was the linchpin issue of the election, really. And I think, you know, looking at the sentiment during the campaign was that, we kind of agree with having a new library, but we just kind of woke up one day and here's this $100 million proposal for this design that I don't remember ever seeing before. And I think Lauren McClain, you know, picked up on that and said, yeah, I support the library. Obviously, you know, she voted in favor of it and voted in favor of moving the cabin and, but said, but I want to do this in a more open process and with more public involvement.
And we should note that there was another runoff election on Tuesday as well. And this was Caldwell City Council. And a former, and I think we can very well say disgraced, state legislator was voted into this council seat. And there, you know, in that election, not as big of a turnout at all. But still, this is significant.
It is significant, especially considering who I think the candidates were. So former state senator John McGee, and if you've been paying attention at all, you know that he was charged with the DUI. He was forced to resign after
he went to jail.
He has served time. He was credibly accused by a staffer of pretty serious sexual harassment. And so this is somebody who left the state house with a huge cloud over his head. And then he comes back and says, you know, I want to give back to my community. In the general election, there were two people that he ran against. One of them was an incumbent city councilman. The other one was Evangeline Beachler, who is chairman of the Idaho Democratic Party, chairwoman of the Idaho Democratic Party right now. In the runoff, Evangeline Beachler got about 40%. And John McGee got 60%. It's a pretty decent turnout for a Democrat, I would say. But I think it still surprised a lot of people that more people in Caldwell didn't seem concerned that this man has not just a couple things on his record, very serious things. He stole a vehicle. You know, during his the DUI incident wasn't just getting pulled over. He stole a vehicle and crashed it into someone's lawn.
Right. And thank goodness there was no one out and about.
Absolutely.
When this happened, because it was late at night, because it was in the middle of a suburban neighborhood.
Absolutely. And so very, very serious charges against him. And it was only 8 years ago. That's not that long ago. And so there was this question that we've talked about on the program before about whether or not we give people second chances, but also what that second chance looks like. Does that second chance mean giving somebody power? And a city council seat, that has a lot of power involved mm-hmm. in it. You have power over the people in your community, and you also have power over people in City Hall. You know, redemption doesn't always have to be a position of power. Redemption can be volunteering in a position that has no glory whatsoever, like volunteering in a soup kitchen. That's not what we're seeing here with John McGee. We are seeing the voters of Caldwell give him back a position of power. And I don't know if it was because they didn't want to put a liberal woman in that position, or they really did agree with what John McGee was proposing, or if they just didn't care about the DUI.
One thing that struck me was I saw a comment thread on one of the Idaho Press articles about the election where someone made a comment basically saying, well, it's good that we got McGee. We didn't want to have, a very liberal person in instead. And Evangeline Beachler herself wrote in the comment and said, hey, if you ever want, I'll talk with you anytime to chat politics. You know, we can go to the gun range and talk politics, something like that. And the person responded and said, no, I know you're a socialist. I know what you believe. And just totally kind of shut her down. And there were several in that thing where she kept saying, well, I lost the election, but I'm open to chat with anyone and any, about what I believe. And there was really that hard set from that minority that was interacting with her who said, no, you're a crazy left person. I don't want to interact with you at all. And I think that maybe some of those, some of the messaging that came out about her prior to the election could have turned people. There was a mailer that was associate came out that had, I believe, communist imagery on it that was associating her with, with Bernie Sanders. That those types of things probably made an impact.
We had Jasper Likowsky on the day after the elections, and he's a professor at the College of Idaho in political science. And what he said was there was a resounding vote of we would rather have a person who has been charged with very serious sexual harassment charges, very serious. We should be incredibly clear on that, as well as a DUI, someone who has served jail time versus a Democrat.
That's exactly it.
Jasper said that is the statement that was made with that vote.
And Evangeline Beachler ran a very clean campaign. They did a lot of door knocking. They engaged with a lot of voters, not just Beachler, but also her entire campaign. And in her statement, she said that she was really proud and really happy with the way the campaign went. And so I think this says a little bit about perhaps the uphill battle that Democrats are facing in the state and have been facing for a very long time.
Joining us in studio today, Mark Carmel with the Idaho Press, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Statesman, and Melissa Devlin with Idaho Public Television. So in the last segment, we talked about the runoff election on Tuesday, and then Wednesday morning, another surprise, Senate Minority Leader Matt Erpelding sends out a resignation letter, which is effective today, December 6th, saying that he is doing this basically to advance his career, going to the Boise, Greater Boise Metro Chamber of Commerce as, I believe, their vice president of government affairs. Everyone can understand being able to, wanting to advance your professional career. Still surprising, though.
Interesting. And so he's minority leader in the House, and he has been there since 2017. And so he is resigning with a month to go before the legislative session. Representative Alana Rubel will take over as interim minority leader until they're able to vote on the permanent replacement for Representative Erpelding. He also cited wanting to spend more time with his family. But this is a huge loss for House Democrats and also, quite frankly, the Democratic Party. Representative Erpelding was a force when it came to fundraising, not just in the Boise area and in his own legislative district, but statewide. I actually ran into him in North Idaho in October when he was on his way back from a fundraiser and I was coming back from an assignment. And so he has been very active in the Democratic Party. And, I was also doing an analysis on the experience level in among the House Democratic Caucus now that he is on his way out. He was in the middle of his fourth term. And there are only two people who have been there longer than he has in among the House Democrats and two other people who have been there the same amount of time. And the rest of them are pretty new. How that compares to House Republicans, there are also a number of new House Republicans who have been there fewer than four terms. But the percentage that I looked at, the Democrats have a disadvantage when it comes to experience now.
Oh, and I think there was a lot of speculation, at least within the media, about the timing, as you had mentioned, Melissa, of this announcement.
Yeah, and I know. Well, so the speculation is that that Dave Beter might be nominated for that position, and it's just coincidental that Erpelding announces his resignation on the Wednesday after the election. I can tell you that's a coincidence. That, you know, you don't just decide to resign from your state legislative seat in one day. This was something that he had been considering, and I think, you know, people need to. I think it's an interesting thing to speculate about Dave Beter going back to the state legislature. But I think something that's important to consider is that, you know, these legislators are real people, are human beings that have to pay bills and have young families and have mortgages. And the state legislative position is a part-time position, allegedly, that pays $17,000 a year. And as most people, observers know, this is a year-round job, and they are doing a lot of work when they're not in session. And then when they are in session, they're there all the time and constantly working. And so, you know, I think probably if you take that $17,000 and figure out how much that comes out per hour, they're probably making less than minimum wage. So I think the financial reasons cannot be underestimated in a decision like this.
As far as speculation as to whether Beter would even be interested in the position, I spoke to somebody who is close to Beter who said he lost an election. He hasn't lost his mind. And I laughed and laughed and realized that this person had a really good point. You know, Dave Beter, like him or not, has spent the last 16 years as mayor of Boise. This was his life. And to make such a drastic decision in such a quick amount of time, let's just say I would be very, very shocked if he decided to go for that position, especially after some of the conversations I've had.
I think that it would also surprise me if Mayor Beter decided to go that route because, you know, he did serve in the legislature before he became mayor. And just some of the ways that he talks about the state legislature and the process and how things get done over at the Capitol, I don't see that as being something he'd want to go back to. He would go from running, you know, Idaho's most liberal city as its head executive to being in a minority party in a pretty weak position in the Capitol. You know, that would, as a junior legislator, I really just don't see that as something he would be interested in, you know, as someone who's had a full career of public service. It's not out of the realm of possibility, but the legislature just doesn't sound like his bag.
And not only that, don't forget that the Republican majority in the legislature and Dave Beter have never gotten along.
Right.
Dave Beter was like this boogeyman for Republican lawmakers. It was like, well, we don't want to be like Boise. And Beter had no problem firing back at the lawmakers. Do you really think that he wants to spend 3 months a year with those guys after the past several years of them fighting? I don't think so.
So while we're on that subject, my dream is that Dave Beter would run for Ada County Highway District Commission. I don't know if Jim Hansen is going to continue on, but I'm just going to throw that out there as a possibility.
That's your Christmas wish?
That's my Christmas wish.
You know, while we're talking about Mayor Beter in the future, one thing that I learned on Wednesday is that, you know, so Mayor Beter is appointed himself to the Urban Renewal Agency, Capital mm-hmm. City Development Corporation, and his term is through 2022. And he, you know, I was told that he will likely serve through that term. And, you know, so McLean will be appointing people to that CCDC board, but she can only appoint people as they leave. You know, she can't roll up and say, everybody out, I'm putting all my people in, you know, and that is a major board that is going to be controlling huge swaths of the city. And that, you know, and Mayor Beter, from what I've heard, he's going to stay there, and all of his allies are on that board right now. A lot of them with terms ending in 2022.
Get your popcorn out. We can all sit and watch.
I can't wait.
I know, right?
I can't wait.
I want to talk about Governor Little and regulations, or I should say lack thereof, because he made a big announcement this week saying we are now the least regulated state in the nation. And Melissa, you are rolling your eyes.
I would never.
Never, ever.
Here's the thing. There have been a number of regulations that have been cut, and some of them have been substantial. One of them that I look to is the Board of Pharmacy. You know, this is something that I covered last year, and some of those regulations have made it much easier for the people of Idaho to get treatment at a much lower cost for things like a cold or a sinus infection, that sort of thing. Instead of going to urgent care, you can go to a pharmacy. Pharmacists are trained to be able to spot these symptoms. These are some really positive changes that I think the vast majority of Idahoans can say in a neutral way that, yes, that is it's easier for doctors who studied and worked elsewhere to come here and transfer their license to Idaho. There are some really, really solid positive changes. But a lot of the changes that were made were cutting things like archaic language or getting rid of sentences that no longer apply. It was simplifying language more than actually cutting some of the regulations. And so the idea that we've reduced these by 75% is a little misleading, because there were a lot of things in there that were never used in the first place.
And Scott, you wrote an editorial about this.
Yeah, and let me say right up front that this has required a tremendous amount of work. There have been a lot of people who've been doing a lot of work to reduce these regulations and rules and going over code. And you know, I spoke with Matt Drake, drafting attorney with the Legislative Services Office. I mean, he has done so much work, and I don't want to disparage at all the work that they've done. But what I've seen is that you know, for example, they struck the words moral turpitude from code out of several sections of code in the licensing area. One of the licenses, occupational licenses that they're getting rid of is cemeterian. So the state formed this board of cemeterians in 1989, 30 years ago. Well, the board never got formed. They've never promulgated any rules. No one's ever applied for it. And so they got rid of it. So, yes, they got rid of this section of code
that never applied to anybody or anything.
Right. So it's not like we're overturning the Clean Air Act or allowing businesses to dump raw sewage in the Boise River now. So I don't know how much of it really is true regulatory reform. Like Melissa said, there are some things that they have done that have improved and reduced red tape. But for the most part, a lot of it is duplicative stuff. A lot of it is consolidating things and striking archaic language and outdated code.
And that gets me to the question of what's the metric of success here? If it's just reducing the number of words and the number of pages, then, you know, let's roll out the mission accomplished banner. You know, they certainly did that. And that, you know, not to sneeze at that, it also makes it easier for people to navigate those sections of rules. And so that is something that is a net positive for Idahoans, that they don't have to sort through all of this archaic nonsense to get to the parts that matter. So that is something that's good. But what is the actual metric of success here? You know, Governor Little mentioned that when you reduce red tape, it brings in higher paying jobs. Okay, so how high of a paying job are we talking about? How many of these jobs? What sectors are we hoping these jobs end up in? What's the timeline? And how are we going to differentiate between jobs that came in, higher paying jobs that came in because of the lack of red tape versus other private sector factors here? So there are a lot of questions as far as like, okay, we have a lighter book of rules now, and there are a lot of benefits to that. So what's next? And how are you going to say truly mission accomplished?
And we need to wrap it up. But before we do, I do want to note that, Melissa, you cover the legislature every single year. And this year.
Except for this year.
Except for this year. Because.
Right. I am very pregnant, and I am going on maternity leave, and I am missing the majority of the legislature this year. And part of the reason we wanted to bring it up on this show is, Gemma, you, I don't think this is news to you, are going to be filling in for me on Idaho Reports.
This. Right. Yeah. So,
surprise.
So I will be trying to do my best to do the heavy lifting that Melissa does. I will do my best, but you are not replaceable. So just, you know, allow me to fumble and get through it.
You're going to do a fantastic job. Hopefully I will be able to keep this baby until the due date and I'll be able to host the first couple shows. But whenever you have to hop in, you are going to do a fantastic job. And I'm so looking forward to seeing what you do with those couple months that I'm gone.
Right. And then just please call in or text me if I'm screwing it up. So
you're gonna do great, Jem. And thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you all so much for coming in. As I say, truly one of my favorite things we do on this show is the Reporter Roundtable. And we should note, you guys do this on your free time. And I just appreciate you taking the time out of your busy, busy schedules, out of you having a baby, Melissa, to come in. So our panel today, Margaret Carmel with the Idaho Press, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Statesman, and Melissa Davlin with Idaho Public Television. This is Idaho Matters.